Rock 107 WIRX, WIRX.com. It's Brock, and we are back once again to continue our conversation on human trafficking. If you've been listening to WIRX, you've heard me talk about the Michigan Abolitionist Project and their fight, their continued uphill battle to raise awareness for human trafficking and hopefully put an end to it sooner than later, because the ultimate goal is that we can come on here and just talk about the weather or something else, not what is going on right now next door, behind closed doors, out in the open, that we need to raise awareness about. And that is human trafficking. Real quick, Heather, just for people hopping in, maybe if they found this podcast, tell us a little bit about what you do with human trafficking and the Michigan Abolitionist Project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my name is Heather McGannon. I am the West Michigan Program Coordinator for the Michigan Abolitionist Project. My main role is as the coordinator for the Southwest Michigan Human Trafficking Task Force down in the Tri-County area. And I work for the Michigan Abolitionist Project, and we are working to prevent and end human trafficking in Michigan and beyond. And the main ways that we do that are through education and awareness and collaborating with other organizations.
A lot of great work you guys do. Amazing stuff. And Emily, the other part of this, who's on the other side of the state, why don't you tell us, just give a little background, just like Heather did.
Not too much to add. As Heather said, she's a program coordinator. I'm also a program coordinator. We're in the Metro Detroit area, and we do a lot of the same stuff. It's all education, awareness, community outreach. We've got conferences that we hold throughout the year, webinars that we host to our Facebook page every month. So just lots of education and awareness for the public, for professionals. Thanks.
It's a lot that we are trying to cover in a conversation that it's kind of hard to even find where do you start, because we've gone in, what is human trafficking? Okay, well, that's not an easy question. That's not just a one size fits all answer. And that's what we've kind of broken apart. Supply and demand, we've talked about that as well, which gets eye-opening, really, is what the best I can describe all of this. Because as we talk about this, I think what a lot of people are going to realize is that this is more common than we know. This is a conversation, I'll be honest, in my 15 odd years in radio, it's never been brought up. It's not, so we've raised awareness for so many things, but now here's something that it could be happening to a neighbor, to a classmate at your child's school, someone you work with, a friend of a friend, and you just don't know, because we don't know what to look for. We're not sure what exactly it is. And that's what we're going to try and do here during this multiple part series with the Michigan Abolitionist Project. So with that said, let's talk about some of the different types of human trafficking people should know about. And right off the bat, everyone's going to think about sex trafficking. Like, well, that's it, right? It's just sex trafficking, isn't it? Which is one of them. And we'll get into. So I don't know if Heather, you want to start, whoever wants to start up, why don't we just break down the different types of human trafficking we should know about?
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Brock. Yeah, so we will start with sex trafficking today because it is what people most commonly hear about. I think it's a little over sensationalized sometimes too. That's why it catches people's attention. But sex trafficking happens when someone is forced, lied to, threatened, or coerced into performing any sexual service in exchange for something of value. So that could be a commercial sex act, actually physically having sex with somebody. That could be working at the strip club. That could be working in the porn industry. And exchanging something of value. So it doesn't always have to be money. Sometimes it can be food, shelter, drugs, a cell phone. Kids who are runaway or people who are homeless may not need money. I mean, they need money, but they also need a place to stay, food, etc. So sometimes it's not always for money. It's just something of value. So that's sex trafficking.
And go ahead, Heather. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, no, yep, you're good. I was just gonna say, going off of that, Emily, too. If there is anyone who's under the age of 18 that is involved in commercial sex, automatically he or she is considered a victim of sex trafficking. The like we talked about in the last couple episodes, the elements of force, fraud, and coercion do not need to be there. They're not necessary, because we see victims as that the victims are children and they're inherently vulnerable. So we consider any minor, anyone who is under the age of 18 that's involved in commercial sex is a victim of child sex trafficking.
And I don't know if there's an answer to this question. Do we see a larger problem with sex trafficking 18 and older or child sex trafficking, or is it kind of one and the same? If there's an answer for that.
That's a good question. In Michigan, I would have to look on the Polaris, the National Human Trafficking Hotline, to find statistics like that specifically. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Heather, do you have anything else to add?
I don't know about the statistics. I do know a lot of people that when maybe they eventually come out of the life, or that it's brought to somebody's attention, or it's the situation, the trafficking situation is found out many times, they might be an adult, but it started when they were a minor.
Much younger. Yeah.
So I think it varies, you know, depending on the age. It's usually typically, and we'll get more into this, but whenever that vulnerability presents itself for the trafficker to take advantage of. So maybe for some people that's when they're younger, they're maybe born into a vulnerable situation. And others, maybe that vulnerable situation happens later in their life due to certain circumstances. So yeah, we'll get more into that. But I think that's a hard one to.
and I do want to add too, for anyone watching right now too, and asking these questions, when I said that uphill battle when I first started talking about this is still such a new conversation being had. I think you said in the first podcast, the first sex trafficking bill wasn't written until 2000 or something like that.
And so, and in Michigan, 2006.
So at 2006, so we're barely two decades into this this conversation. So there's still a lot we don't know. We're learning statistics on that hopefully eventually we can, you know, get better numbers and do our more due diligence with it. So as we have this conversation, we're going to find out that this is a conversation that only started really getting traction about two decades ago. Let's talk about some other type of human trafficking as well. So we hit the sex trafficking, the child sex trafficking. What are some other human trafficking that can happen around the world?
So some less common, some types that people don't hear about as often that we also want to touch on. There's familial trafficking as well. So youth may be trafficked by their own family members, their own parents, generally for basic needs or drugs. Babies are sometimes raised specifically for the purpose of trafficking. Illegal adoptions also happens worldwide, where traffickers profit off of tricking families into giving up their kids and sending them to other states to be adopted by, sending them to other countries to get adopted by families. There's also forced child marriage, not to get confused with arranged marriages, but child marriage becomes slavery when the child has not genuinely given their free and informed consent and cannot realistically leave or end the marriage due to abuse, threats, or exploitation. And forced child marriages, that happens in countries all over the world, even here in the US. There's also this issue of child soldiers. And that's a little more prevalent, particularly in developing countries where political, economic, and social instability are more common. But boys and girls as young as 8 years old are taken from their homes, forced to fight and participate in atrocious acts of war and violence. begging rings is actually a form of human trafficking as well. You might see that in some place like India, for example, where kids are either just orphans and then picked up by a trafficker and forced to beg on the streets and then turn in all the money to the trafficker, or just rummage through garbage dumps all day to find anything of value and turn it into their trafficker.
I would have never thought of that. That's what, and again, as I'll say this probably 100 times, it's so eye-opening. I would never have begging rings where it just exploiting vulnerable people. It for, again, what we've talked about and the main linchpins of all this, I never would even cross my mind to think about maybe someone begging on the street has someone, forcing them to do that.
Mm-hmm. What about organ trafficking? Have you ever heard of people doing
that? I mean, you always hear like the old joke, oh, I woke up in a bathtub with ice. Like, but the fact that it's such a problem, it's actually, I'm sure, a lot of inner workings on that. I mean, good God, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, If you think we don't have enough stats on sex trafficking, labor trafficking, organ trafficking is like super
I can only imagine. But okay. After the begging ring, another one that's really common here, and just looking at our notes, is labor trafficking. And I know that's something that is probably quite a big issue here in Michigan, even especially in the Southwest area where we're at with a lot of the farms. So could we talk about labor trafficking?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right on with that. It's actually estimated in Michigan that there are more labor trafficking than sex trafficking cases. But labor trafficking, again, is like, as hard as it is to recognize any trafficking, labor trafficking specifically is just another beast in itself to identify and to offer and provide the right services for victims of labor trafficking. But to just give a little overview of labor trafficking, it happens when someone is forced, lied to, threatened, or coerced into providing labor or services. Mm-hmm. It can happen in many types of work, including restaurants, construction, factories, nail salons. Here in Michigan, specifically agriculture. Mm-hmm. It often entails the abuse of a contract, hazardous working or living conditions, many times, especially debt bondage, and so on. And I think one of the reasons that labor trafficking, it's thought that labor trafficking is more of a problem here in Michigan, is because of our long growing season. We have a lot of agricultural workers. Michigan is actually the second highest state in the U.S. to have H-2A visa workers. The H-2A visa is a specific visa that is basically the migrant worker visa, where people can, foreign nationals can come up with this visa to work in the U.S. This is regulated by the U.S. Employers are required to pay the H-2A visa workers a specific amount. We have a lot of these migrant workers coming up to Michigan for all of our different growing seasons. But mm-hmm. I think it's important to realize, we're the second highest in the U.S. just next to California.
Because California, if you think about the agricultural output that they put out, that's unbelievable. When you think about those numbers, and of course we see it summertime, and I think there's a lot of people like, oh, this is amazing. Look at all the workers out in the field. This is so cool. They're in the vineyards and everything, without thinking about the fact that there is a high probability that there are people out there working under conditions, horrible conditions, and for the reasons that you both have listed there. And it's nice. We're getting our grapes and our produce, and there's so much more to it that we wouldn't see from this agricultural side of it and the labor side.
They're pretty isolated, right? I mean, they're in their own little world. We never interact with them directly. So
And I think, you know, there are companies that are doing it right and doing it well, and who are paying the workers what they should, and it really can be a really mutually beneficial thing for the employer to have the work that they need for, you know, whatever specific growing season it is. And typically the workers who are coming up are coming from a financial situation that they are needing the money and to be able to bring it back to their families. And so it can provide really just a beautiful situation when it's done right. However, obviously we're talking about human trafficking and those that will exploit those vulnerabilities. And so if you even want to just, I'll give kind of just an example of what that could look like. I think that, sometimes it's hard to imagine, like, how is this even happening? What does it look like? And again, it's another thing that you can Google and see there are cases in Michigan of labor trafficking that you can read about these survivors' specific stories. But typically what we see when we have a labor trafficking situation is that a great job is offered to someone who comes from a different country. Maybe they want to provide a better life life for their family. And they want to bring, you know, they'll come up to Michigan just for the season and bring that money back to help their family. So an employer will recruit to this specific country, maybe a specific city in a country. And as soon as the worker comes up to Michigan, typically what happens is in that short time when they get there, the employer will ask for their documents. Then eventually they'll bring them to whatever facility they'll be working at. And they will usually use threat to keep the victims there with them, threaten them that, you know, if they try to run, if they tell anyone that they know where their family is, that their family will be harmed. There's a lot of fear of deportation, that illegal kind of thing, even though they are there legally. A lot of workers do not understand our laws. They don't understand exactly what's going on. And so it's very easy for an employer to trick them and tell them that they're going to be deported or that law enforcement's going to come after them. Mm-hmm. And that eventually leads to just making the victim feel trapped and think that there's no way out. Many times he or she might not know the language, our customs, they don't know our laws. They may not even know where they are. And so then they feel trapped. And in these working conditions, they usually have pretty bad working conditions. They're forced to work for long days. Many times their food is rationed, maybe have to stay inside for long periods of time, little sleep, no time off. Either they're not paid or they're paid very, very little. And many times physical abuse is also involved. And so, yeah, like Emily was saying earlier, like with labor trafficking, it is so hard to spot because typically these men and women are isolated. And we don't see them a lot. Maybe we do see them, you know, when we're driving by, seeing them in the fields. But many times we don't have interactions with them. And so that's where a lot of research, where a lot of help is going into labor trafficking, is figuring out what are the avenues that we can use to help recognize these people and give them the help and services that they need.
It's interesting in talking about this and the little signs that you look for or big signs that you look for. And with all of this happening here in Michigan, again, being the second largest, just behind California, when it comes to labor trafficking, why don't we see more red flags with this, and what can kind of be done, or if there is anything being done at this point to help combat that here in Michigan?
Well, first I'll just say, I don't think that we're second for labor trafficking in the U.S., but we are second for having those H-2A visas.
Okay.
We might be. I don't know that statistic though, for sure, but we are second with the H-2A visas. So what can we be doing? How can we recognize those signs? I think that it's, if you are in a situation where you are in contact with someone who is, working in agriculture, just asking them if you speak the same language as them, asking them, you know, what is, where are you from, and what is it like being here? And, just striking up those conversations with them. My husband actually works at a food pantry, and that's something we've been talking a little bit more about because, they have a lot of H-2A workers that come into their food pantry, and what can it look like for them? They have Spanish speakers there, and so they can have those conversations more freely, I guess. And I think trying to recognize what it is that you're seeing. If you know someone who employs H-2A workers, asking them about what that situation is like for them and how they're caring for the workers that they have.
Yeah. I think it's interesting too, you know, because when you hear about this and migrant workers, people coming up from different countries, chasing that American dream, you know, trying to get a better life, and it's easy to exploit. because it's easy to kind of paint this big picture. Oh, we got this. There's work. There's jobs to be done. Plenty of work. And then it's so easy to then take that and twist it to a much darker purpose. And you get in the work. And it's tough also not kind of feeling guilty about it, because we all love low price produce. We all love low price food. And it's kind of harder to accept maybe, and maybe as a culture, as a society, we can do better about looking into where these big problem areas are, these big farms, these big agriculture. And I grew up on a farm. You know, I grew up with working with a lot of people from different countries on dairy farms and everything like that. And it's interesting to now see this kind of other side, because when I was younger, I didn't think about that. You wouldn't think that. I don't know. He wants to be here. He's supposed to be here. This is how he's doing this all. But you don't know the kind of conditions that they're put in just by working. So I think that's an interesting take, and something that is so prevalent, or could be prevalent here, especially in Southwest Michigan. We've all kind of see that. Yeah. Is there anything we need to add, or you guys would like to add here with labor traffic? I know we've covered a lot, and we'll have to break here in a little bit, and we're going to talk about the internet in our next podcast as we look into human trafficking and how the internet plays a role. Is there anything else that we might want to leave people with when it comes to labor trafficking and what we've discussed, or the different types of trafficking here that we've done, not just labor trafficking, but different types in general?
Yeah. I one thing that just came to my mind too was a lot of companies that are caring for their workers and caring for them well, they want people to know that they're doing that. And so when you look on their websites, a lot of times they'll have specific sections that you can look at that will talk about their employees and how they care about their employees. And so those that are doing the work and doing it well, a lot of times they will advertise that. So would definitely suggest you to look into that.
Actually, just to hop in on that, is there a website that, and again, I don't want to throw you under the bus here with a question that may not have an answer to it yet. Is there a website that maybe gives a background to companies that are open about their workforce, the people they have, you know, kind of like when you can look up like who's polluting and who's not? Is there a place where you can go if people want to be more conscious when, you know, when they go to the grocery store, they're buying produce or products like that, or any kind of service where they could see maybe where what companies are listed? Is that even a thing at this point that you know of?
Yeah, they're one of those good resources, those websites, those.
Yeah.
There is not one single place you can go to. There are certain different certifications. One certification that you can look at for sure is Fair Trade. When something is made Fair Trade, there is a direct commitment to making sure that that forced labor is not involved in the supply chain to the best of their abilities. Honestly, for me, what I do when I'm looking at any product, if it's something that I'm buying online, I always look at their website and look at the About Us section. And there's usually some, if they care, there's something about it. When you're looking at a product in store, again, if you see that fair trade label, fairly traded, chocolate, Rainforest Alliance, that's another one that you can know that slavery is not a part of their supply chain. Actually just saw that Hershey's started to make a line that's Rainforest Alliance certified, which is really great. They've been under a lot of scrutiny over the years about their chocolate cocoa production. So those are some certifications you can look at, and really just looking at the labels and seeing if they say anything about their supply chain.
Yep.
I just would add one other thing. Brock, you had asked if it's so pervasive, why don't we see this more often? And what are the things that we could be looking for? And just to add on to that, context is super key in being able to help understand if what you're seeing is sex or labor trafficking or something else entirely. You know, people think someone's following them around IKEA and, oh my gosh, they're going to traffic me. Like, maybe they'll traffic you. Maybe they're just trying to steal your money, rob you, assault you, whatever. So not to sue.
Or they're just walking too close.
Or they're they can smell good. So not everything is human trafficking, but you know, if There are some specific signs to look for, but people who work in certain industries, for example, though, may be more likely to spot signs of trafficking that are specific to the way that industry operates. Mm-hmm. So just getting into some of those industries specifically, like you would see sex trafficking, for example, street prostitution. I think we're all aware of that. Online escorts. There's a handful of different websites that people can order or buy an online escort. Hotels. Residential brothels, illicit massage businesses, strip clubs, gentlemen clubs, modeling services. A lot of modeling service, well, I shouldn't say a lot of, but some modeling services can, they'll make it seem like it's a modeling service when really once you get there, they'll start asking you to do a whole bunch of other things. Truck stops, pornography industry. And then Heather, what are some of those other labor trafficking examples? I know we had talked a lot about agriculture, but there's
a slew of other examples might be that you could see in construction, nail salons, restaurants, commercial cleaning, factories, panhandling, fisheries, the textile industry. We see that a lot with the clothes and products that we purchase. Domestic servitude would be another big labor trafficking example. That's another one that maybe as we're talking about Michigan specifically, you know, we were talking about agriculture, but US-wide domestic servitude is also another large way that we see labor trafficking. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mentioned that textile industry too, and other ways that we're able to see know that what we're purchasing is, you know, from the a good place. So yeah, there's actually, if you're listening and you're from Southwest Michigan, there's actually a fair trade storefront right downtown St. Joe. It's called Bound for Freedom. And everything that's in their store is made without forced labor. And they do the store is super cute. They have some awesome stuff. So would definitely, if you guys are looking for some things for Christmas right now, to head on over there and pick up a few things. We also have an ethical storefront guide that MAP has put out to, if you're listening from outside the Southwest Michigan area, you can look on there and find your city and look at the stores that are in your area. So,
That's great. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Again, I think I'll try and wrap this up here the best I can is doing your due diligence. This is what we've talked about from the very beginning, you know, checking out those websites, just doing your own research. And we're not expecting anyone to be experts. All right. We're not expecting everyone to see all the signs. It's a lot, and it's a lot to take in, stuff that we're still learning about, whether it's sex trafficking to labor trafficking and everything in between. I mean, hell, I learned about one, the begging. I mean, who would have thought? So there's so much out there, but if you do your due diligence, you do your research, you can start making those little differences. It's the fair trade websites, those storefronts, again, going to map-mi.org and just doing that research. And it goes back to what I always say when I talk about this on air is if you see something that you don't think looks right, say something. It's okay. What's the worst that can happen? Like, well, no. Hey, you're wrong. That's okay. We're not doing that. But at least you made that effort. And I think that's, again, in talking about the different styles, there are different types of trafficking. This is what it is. Just doing that due diligence, taking the time to look and doing our best to help out where we can. Because it's a lot. It is a lot. You may think it's just something that's quite simple. But obviously, as we're learning here with each of these podcasts, there's a lot to it and a lot we need to dig into. So this is always, once again, super educational. Thank you, ladies, so much. Make sure you check out our previous podcast, again, where we talk about human trafficking kind of in a nutshell. We talk about supply and demand. And our upcoming podcast, where we will talk about the internet and how that plays a role in human trafficking and the things we've talked about. So once again, Heather, Emily, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
All right. We'll see you next time. Again, check out the Michigan Abolitionist Project online, map-mi.org. And we'll be back with more next time. WIRX.